welcome you all this morning, a morning on which we're going to be looking at this part of Jesus' trial where he is brought before Pilate. The Jews had already, or the Jewish authorities at least, had already condemned the Lord to death as far as they were concerned, but because Rome ruled over the region, and according to Roman law at that time, they needed Roman approval to carry out a capital sentence. So no one could act, not even the Jewish authorities, without the approval of Rome. Now, I just want to draw your attention that when we regard the literal sense, or stories in the literal sense, there are two paths that we need to keep in mind. One is the path that illustrates the rejection of what is good and true in a person's life, and the other path is that which illustrates the acceptance of what is good and true. So you always have this balance of opposites within the Word. And today, as we look at this story and its application with regard to the rejection of what is good and true in the life, we're going to, first of all, consider a little bit with regard to the structure of the external mind and how that structure is illustrated here in our story today. I just draw your attention to the structure of the external mind, and if you wanted to do a deeper study of that, then if you read the chapters in True Christian Religion, chapter 9, which is a chapter on repentance, and chapter 10, which is the chapter on reformation and regeneration, we get a good picture there of what's involved in terms of the external mind and how the Lord works at that level in order to bring about our own regeneration. Let us pray. We come to our readings this morning, and the first reading is from the book of Psalms, and we're reading Psalm 2, verses 1 to 3. Why do the nations rage, and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, "Let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us." And reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 1 to 15. Immediately, in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus, led him away, and delivered him to Pilate. Then Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered and said to him, "It is as you say." And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. Then Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you." But Jesus still answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Now at the feast he was accustomed to releasing one prisoner to them, whomever they requested. And there was one named Barabbas, who was chained with his fellow rebels. They had committed murder in the rebellion. Then the multitude, crying aloud, began to ask him to do just as he had always done for them. But Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd, so that he should rather release Barabbas to them. Pilate answered and said to them again, "What then do you want me to do with him whom you call the king of the Jews?" So they cried out again, "Crucify him." Then Pilate said to them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they cried out all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wanting to gratify the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus, after they had scourged him, to be crucified. The reading from the Heavenly Doctrines this morning is from the work True Christian Religion, paragraph 533. There are two loves from long time past have become deeply rooted in the human race. The love of controlling everyone and the love of possessing everyone's goods. The first of these, if given its head, actually plunges headlong into an ambition to be the God of heaven. The other, if given its head, plunges headlong into an ambition to be the God of the world. All the other evil loves, and they are legion, are subordinate to these two. But it is extremely difficult to examine these two loves because they lodge so deep within and hide themselves away. They are like vipers lurking in holes in a rock and holding in their poison. The reason why what the will intends has to be examined is that the will is the seat of love. For the will is a receiver of love, as was shown before. From the will, the pleasures emanating from every love spread into the perceptions and the thoughts of the understanding. For they are incapable of doing anything of their own accord, but are activated by the will. For they take the will's part, agreeing with and supporting everything to do with its love. So the will is the house in which a person lives, and the understanding is the forecourt through which he goes in and out. That is why it is stated that the intentions of the will must be examined. When they have been examined and banished, a person is lifted up from his natural will, which is beset by evils, inherited and of his own doing, and brought into possession of a spiritual will. And by means of this, the Lord reforms and regenerates the natural will, and by means of this the sensory and voluntary parts of the body, and so the whole person. So we come to the story of Jesus before Pilate. Before that, I just want to talk to you a little bit about the structure of the external mind as taught within the teachings of the Church. And when we're talking about the external mind, we're talking about the normal seat of our consciousness. And what we are taught is that this exists on two levels. And so there is an internal level to the natural mind, and there is an external level to the natural mind. And the internal level has its own willing and thinking faculties, and the external level also has external willing and thinking faculties. And so with regard to the external's willing and thinking faculties, these are described as speaking, as being the external of thought, and doing as being the external of the will, or the external of what one desires, feels, what one's affections are tied to. And so within the internal we have the willing and the thinking proper, if you like, the desires and the thoughts that are associated and linked to those desires. And they make their way out through our actions and our speech. Now the principle is that what is more internal seeks to make what is more external conform to it. So whatever the desire and the associated thoughts at an internal level are, these are constantly seeking in our speech and in our action to find their expression. And the reason that is because it is only through their expression in speech and action in the external world that the delight that is associated with those things can actually be felt. And so they have a fulfillment in that. They gain a fulfillment of their delight, and that's what fulfillment is about. Now, Swedenborg points to the fact that we can know that the external mind has these two parts if we just choose to reflect upon our own thinking and feeling processes and our acting, of course. And what he says is that what we need to do is to look within when we are asked to do something, perhaps, to act in a particular way, perhaps at someone's request, which at an external level, we give the appearance of being very happy to do that, to be helpful, to be kind, to be generous, whatever it happens to be. But if we chose to reflect, we would see that inside there may be a harbouring of some resentment, perhaps of being asked to do something that encroaches on our time. But we give the impression that we're happy to do it. And what that shows us is that there is two parts to the mind. There is what is done externally, and there is what is thought and felt internally. And often our experience is that these two things aren't in alignment. Now, the ideal condition in terms of the structure of this mind is, from divine origin, is to think and will what is good and true, and to speak and to act from what is good and true. And so, in such a case, the internal shapes the external, or what is thought about and loved concerning good and truth is then comes into the external realm of our life and being, and seeks to create the means by which those things that are at a deeper level can be expressed, and that expression is called use. So if a person has their mind ordered that way, then they are in the divine order of creation. They're open to having heavenly loves flow in and through them and out into expression, and so that expression is one of what is captured within the life of heaven. We know from our own reflection that we have a ways to go, and that we are constantly in the effort to see that that order is established within us. And that is of the Lord's doing. The Lord is constantly working to have our internal reformed and regenerated so that that external area can also be reformed and regenerated, and so that we become an integrated person, a whole person. And in that sense, we are spiritually a healed person. And in order for that order to be established within us, it is dependent on our responses to what we understand to be good and true, and acting accordingly. And as we act, that brings our will into play, and so the Lord can enter in and begin that new creation within our very being. The reality of the situation, as far as our life here on earth goes, is that we are born into a very different state to that which is described by the ideal. And that state is referred to in the reading from True Christian Religion today. The loves that rule in the natural mind from birth are the loves of self, or the loves of dominating others, and the loves of the world, or the love of wanting to acquire what others have for oneself. And these loves are there and operate due to heredity. It is something that is passed on. But what you have to keep in mind is the external mind is a minute portion of the totality of our mind. All we are dealing with when we're looking at the external mind, while it is in our face all the time, is something that the Lord wants us to work with, and we can work with it to have those things in it cleaned out with His help. So what exists there at birth is a tendency or tendencies that oppose everything heavenly. They are tendencies which put self first and others second. Whereas heavenly love is to put others first and self serves them. So we are born into these tendencies, and they are only tendencies. These tendencies only become something actual if we act on them. Act on them habitually, and they become integrated into our life because we find our delight in them. So what we read today is that if these things are not dealt with, they accumulate over time, these tendencies towards evil, evil being that which is opposed to what is of heaven or love. And they do exert a powerful influence within our life. And if we do act upon these tendencies, then the delight becomes addictive for us. And it supports creating a habitual behavior that promotes an unhealthy attachment within our life that needs to be dealt with. And Swedenborg says that these tendencies constitute the ground of hell, or the hellishness of selfishness within our life. So it's a fairly bleak picture as far as the external man goes. However, the Lord is in control of everything. He is there exerting his influence continually, holding us in freedom. Now, what Swedenborg talks about is the fact that without the Lord's influence, we would rush headlong into the deepest hell. That is the condition of the external man. And you only have to read about the most ancient church in the Arcana Celestia to see what it is we're capable of without any constraints set upon those evil tendencies. That is what they are. We mightn't be able to see it, but that is what truth teaches. And it's important that we hold that in our minds when we regard the work of repentance, reformation, and regeneration. The Lord holds us from mercy, compassion, and love. He holds us in a state of freedom concerning spiritual things, so that no matter what those tendencies are, we have the power to choose something else and to turn it around. So we have the power at any moment to choose life or to choose death. Will we live from heavenly loves, or will we place our lives in the hands of selfish, hellish loves? That is our choice. Will we use truth that we have to acquire goodness in our life, or will we squander that truth and put self first? That second option is the story of Jesus before Pilate. So we come to this situation where truth is being rejected. And in terms of the historical situation, we know that Rome governed Palestine. And this pattern of a foreign power ruling and reigning over the Israelites is recurrent throughout the accounts of the history of the Jewish people throughout the Word. And it's a biblical pattern which illustrates being held captive. And so we see the empires of Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, and Rome all having their time of dominating the country of Israel. And so what is this spiritually? Well, these powers are worldly powers which rise up and dominate what is spiritual. The Israelites represent spiritual truths and goods. And when they no longer rule themselves but are ruled by an external power, what that is, it is a condition whereby spiritual goods and truths are made subservient to worldly desires. It is the giving over to selfish passions within the life that leads to the population of false persuasions, wrong ways of seeing things that begin to override seeing things from a loving and compassionate viewpoint. And so we see that there are two authorities existent in Palestine at this time. There is Pilate, who represents secular Roman authority, an extension of the power of Caesar, and represents the exterior rule by force. And then we have the Jewish authority, or the religious authority, which we see can't act in matters of life and death without the approval of the Roman authority. So what has been spiritual is now subject to what is natural. And that is the condition being described here. So we see in the relationship between Pilate and the Jewish authority, we see there the two levels of the external mind that we mentioned a little earlier. And the interaction between these two powers or authorities is the processes that arise when there is an unwillingness to act on what we know in spiritual matters. It is where truth is rejected. And this is the dynamic that's being played out between these two authorities and powers. So we have to look at Pilate and Roman authority and the Jewish authority as being one and the same mind, but just different levels of it. And we discussed how that the internal is constantly in the effort to make the external conform to its desires and wishes. Now, what constitutes the internal? Well, the internal will always be that which we value most and hold up highest in our life. And that is what will exert its influence throughout the whole natural mind, the perceptions and the understanding, trying to make them conform so that those desires at a more internal level can have their delight and fulfillment through action. So the Jewish authority represents internal willing and thinking that has not bent to truth, that has rejected truth. Pilate then represents the external principle of willing and thinking. And because the Jewish authority is more internal, it is seeking to have Pilate conform to its desires and wishes. So this is the last phase, the last act, if you will, of mercy on the part of the Lord before there is confirmation in selfishness in terms of the state or condition of a person. And so Pilate is the natural reasoning faculty. And we can see that in that he is involved in questioning Jesus. And the interesting thing is that Pilate can see the motives of those that are presenting Jesus before him. And the other thing is that Pilate knows Jesus is innocent. So we see that this is the last vestiges of some insight being given concerning the reality of the living truth that stood before them. And so they are presented with a choice. Jesus, who represents everything good and true, or Barabbas, who represents the spirit of murder and insurrection. That is the choice. The choice between life or death. So let's just have a look now at the text. We see that Jesus is said to be bound after the scribes, well, at least the Sanhedrin had met. So the elders and the chief priests and the scribes had got together and they had decided that they would carry out their action, so they bound the Lord and led him and handed him over to Pilate. The chief priests egged on the crowd, these accusations come out, but Pilate finds nothing in them. He offers them a choice between Jesus or Barabbas, and at a literal level or historical level, probably thinking that at least the people would choose Jesus over Barabbas. He knew Jesus was innocent, but the crowd were incited by the chief priests, and of course they chose Barabbas over Jesus, and Pilate acquiesced. So the consultation and the binding and the leading of Jesus to Pilate represents that internal thought process of the external mind. And what it is that there is this coming together of these various factions within the Sanhedrin, and there is this wanting to bind truth, to not have it impact on the life that they were experiencing. And within ourselves, this is holding truth off when we know that it is pinpointing something in our life. And this holding it off, keeping its influence at bay, leads to this binding, this making truth ineffective in its ability to operate and bring about a reformation within our own minds. So there always has to be two things together before an action can occur. There has to be the desire, and which comes from the will, and there has to be that willingness within the understanding to confirm it. And then it becomes an action, or confirmed in the life. And we see that that is what is going on here. Now the interesting thing is that Jesus is questioned a number of times by Pilate. So as this influence, these selfish desires seeking to bind truth that their life can be preserved, as it makes its way into the understanding, the reasoning faculty is still able to operate and look at the situation. And what it is that initially there is a questioning of the Lord. There is a looking into this question of good and truth. So natural reasoning begins to investigate the word, and what it finds is that in regard to the accusations that are being made against it, it is silent. So the accusations cannot be confirmed. The word is silent on this, and Pilate marveled. But Jesus answered when Pilate asked him this question: "Are you the King of the Jews?" So when natural reasoning comes to the word and begins to investigate it in terms of that question, it confirms its truth. Now a king represents what is true, represents leading principles in our life, the principles that rule and govern us. And the question regarding the Jews, or those from Judah, if you like, has to do with the area of the will. We've discussed how in the Old Testament the nation of Israel was split into two. We had Israel and we had Judah. Judah represents the things of the will. Israel represents the things of the understanding. So Pilate's question, or the question that natural reasoning is putting forth here, is this: are you truth grounded in good? Are you truth grounded in good? Now when that question is asked, the Lord or the Word has to respond affirmatively, because that is what he is, truth grounded in goodness. So when the principle is one of wanting to confirm what is evil and false, the word, out of mercy and compassion, remains silent. Does not want to confirm the condition. But when it is investigated from the ground of genuine inquiry, then the word confirms the truth. Yes, it is. It is goodness. It is truth. That's what it is in essence. And so an insight is made public to all who are there. This is truth grounded in goodness. It's an act of mercy and compassion, lest they hear and they turn. It's not a question selfishness wants to hear. So what it does is it stirs up that mass of thoughts and affections spoke about in our reading today. They are legion, here represented by the crowd, in order to get momentum to see that the sentence is carried out. And so the crowd, they cry for Barabbas. And Pilate, in offering Barabbas, knows that the chief priests act from envy. Now the thing with envy is that you know that what you are envious of does have a better quality than you're willing to admit. The knowledge is there. And so it is, these chief priests and the elders and the scribes, they knew that Jesus was not what they said he was. They knew it. And that is the source of their envy. And the natural reasoning faculty is able to see this, represented by Pilate. It sees that envy is the motive. And it makes it public in the hope that they will turn. The motives are exposed so that they at least can be seen. And if they are seen, then there is a hope that something positive can happen. But they exert their influence even stronger, and the crowd demand the Lord's crucifixion. And at that point, Barabbas is released. The condition is bleak. Barabbas, the spirit of murder and insurrection or rebellion, is released. And that which offers life and hope is condemned to death. And the fact that Pilate gave in to their requests, despite his wanting to distance himself from it, is a typical reaction of the natural reasoning faculty when it rejects truth. It wants to distance itself from the act. Pilate bent to the will of the Jewish authority, and truth was condemned to death. Handed over and whipped. The desires to gratify those lusts represented by the crowd is given by Pilate. Truth is now something worthless, to be treated with contempt, and stripped of its power to work within the mind. A person loses their ability to hear the Lord's word. The conscience is seared. So what we see in this story is a very good example of how the internal and external of the natural mind operate. And what it shows is that there needs to be built up within us a higher level of mind, a new willing from truth. And that is the place of divine truths in our life. The internal has been usurped by these tendencies towards selfishness. The proper order of the internal is to have truth established there so that what is lower can be viewed and assessed. And if it doesn't fit in with the heavenly life, it can be cast out. And if it does, it can be embraced and make us more effective in being more loving and understanding towards others. And so these truths exist within our mind. But until they are recognized as being divine, they sit at the same level as this crowd and are ineffective in our life. But if the Lord is acknowledged, if the Word is acknowledged to be divine, and the heavenly doctrines are valued within our life, then that valuing lifts them up. It brings them closer into the center of our being. They become integrated into our life and thereby are able to govern that external level of life. But if they are not lifted up, then there is a process whereby they are adulterated and made of nil effect in our life. Amen.